Subway has teamed up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for $5 to participating Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See store for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. As a diehard Boston fan, I hate having Yankee fans on, but I'm going to make a rare exception in this case from the Howard Stern Show. Mr. Artie Lang on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. What's happening?
How you doing, Bill? What's going on? And I'll tell you, I'm a Yankee fan, but I hate A-Rod.
You still hate A-Rod, even though he's had the image reversal this year.
Oh, yeah. I love image reversals. It's always great. You know who never needed an image reversal was Greg Nettles.
That's true.
You know, the Butch Hobson never needed an image reversal, all right? I'll talk in your language.
Well,
remember Butch Hobson? Are you too young for that or what?
Of course I remember Butch Hobson throwing it into the third row every other.
How old are you?
Huh?
How old are you? You're young, right?
I'm 2 years younger than you.
Oh, all right. So you remember the late 70s, I remember.
Of course.
That was my favorite time. And I'll tell you what, the Yankees have become such an elitist organization. Like, my old man took me to the 77 World Series. I write about it in my book. I still got the ticket stubs. It was the last row of the upper deck, but they were only $10 a pop, man. Blue-collar people can't see a Yankee game anymore. You drop $800 if you go.
Well, what did you do? You had season tickets. Did you keep them?
My seats for, 7 years were five rows behind third.
Yeah.
And they were great seats. The same exact seats in the new Yankee Stadium would have cost me, $250,000.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, so I ended up, I almost had to, protest, didn't get anything, but.
Why didn't you get your boy Howard to buy him?
Yeah, right. That'd be a fun conversation.
That's like $5 to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, listen, it's funny, Howard doesn't come from money, I don't come from money, and even when you start making money, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you make. When you hear the word, $250,000, you're like, holy
By the way, not a single NBA superstar can identify with what you just said.
Exactly, right. I know, but I ended up getting seats in the first deck, but the first row of the first deck up, so it's not field level, but it's in the first row on the first base side. It's like foul ball heaven.
Oh, that's great.
Like almost 100 G's, so it's crazy.
Did you get any foul balls yet?
You know what? I've only been to a couple of games. My cousin went and sat in the seats, and he got one, which was his first foul ball in 25 years. It was like a confirmation or a baptism in the family. We almost had a party.
You see, I've been waiting for one my whole life, and there was some kid at the Red Sox-Rangers game who caught two in the same at-bat from Josh Hamilton, and it made me want to commit a homicide.
Yeah, that's awful. I hate when I see a young kid in really good seats. You know, it's like they get... I finally sat in those Knicks seats that you see Spike Lee sitting in. Like, this agent I know got me tickets for a Knicks game last year.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, and the rapper Jay-Z was there. And he was with a 10-year-old kid who, I don't know if he was related to the kid or whatever, but it was like a 10-year-old kid sitting in those seats. Like, I don't mind Jay-Z being there, you know, because he came from nothing. He probably never had money, you know. But when you see a little kid being spoiled like that, you're like, what's going to be the only thing that's going to be impressive for that kid when he's 30 years old is if he's playing in the game, you know?
yeah, it's like losing your virginity to a Baywatch lifeguard 10 years ago and not
exactly.
Even know what to do now.
Exactly right. Where I sat was when I was a kid was like losing your virginity to a Baywatch lifeguard for the guys.
Well, for safety reasons, I don't understand how kids are even allowed to sit in that first row, because somebody's just going to get taken out by, Eddie Curry one of these times.
Yeah.
And that's going to be it. They'll just die.
You know who hit impressive? Because, again, for years I was five rows behind third. You know who hit foul balls like a laser beam was Gary Sheffield. And, once once a game when he was on the Yankees, when I'd go, he'd hit a line drive. And you ever see those line drives that are hit so hard when they hit the crowd, it sounds like it's cutting through grass or something.
Right.
Like, I can't believe... I agree with you. Like, kids are not being alert. If you take a broad to a game, like a chick at a baseball game especially, they never watch the game. They just yap. And, you know, it's like you tell them, like, you got to pay attention. Because I'm surprised a chick and a kid don't get killed once a week at a major league game.
Yeah, it almost had. In 1983, a kid got hit behind the Red Sox dugout, and Jim Rice famously went into the stands and carried him in, and they ended up saving him.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm surprised doesn't happen more? Because if you go to a baseball game now, first of all, they're so friggin' long.
Yeah.
They're like 3.5 hours, but everybody's on their Blackberries now all the time. And I think somebody on a Blackberry is going to get taken out next year.
And that'll be funny.
Yeah, that'll actually be good. People will be rooting for that as long as the guy doesn't die. Oh, that was great.
Well,
guy
no, the Blackberry. I mean, listen, if the guy dies, I try to look at everything positive. Like,
right.
You know, if there's a disaster and a bunch of people are killed, I like to think, like, oh, maybe there were a couple of people that were pedophiles there who died, you know. So maybe a guy on a Blackberry who dies in a baseball game, he was a jerk for being on his Blackberry during a, you know, a 3-2 count. And maybe he was an
I got to say that the games are so long, it's almost defensible.
Yeah,
because they really make no effort at all to make these games faster. And now it's like every Red Sox Yankee game is 4-hour miniseries.
It is. It's really it's like watching Roots. You're right. You know, thank God the game started 7 o'clock now. Like back in the day, they were 8 o'clock games. Nowadays, an 8 o'clock game, a kid has to stay up past midnight. Or like Monday Night Football, even. Like, what kid can stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning? You know, it's everything is slower and more pretentious, especially baseball. Baseball's become like crazy with that.
Well, the baseball people will say, "Well, just TiVo it." It's like, kid's not going to get into baseball from some tape TiVo game.
No. I would love when people would do that. Like, you want to watch a game, you know, after VCRs came in, and they would say, well, just tape it and try not to hear the end of it.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
I had friends who would do that. We'd be out on a Friday night, and, you know, you'd be at a bar and had the game on, and my buddies wouldn't look at it and wouldn't let you, like, react to it because they said, I'm taping it. I'm going to watch it when I get home. I said, what are you, crazy?
Well, you must feel it sometimes because you got to get up early to do Stern.
I've been doing the schedule now for 8 years, though. I'm telling you, I don't know. There's no getting used to it. And, I've been on the show basically for all of my 30s. I just, you know, turned 40 a couple of years ago. And so I started out on the show. I was in my early 30s. And, you know, I still had some energy, I guess.
Right.
I could make it through a whole Yankee game. Now I fall asleep in the fifth inning. In the beginning, when I was still gambling a lot, there were a bunch of times where I would fall asleep during a game I had a bet on, and I wouldn't find out if I won or lost money until like the 5:30 a.m. WFAN update in the morning when I woke up. And, you know, the action of the juice you get from gambling, I would just get like 2 seconds of like, did I win or lose? You know?
Yeah. Carollo has a riff about when you host that morning show, people always, the first thing they say to you is like, oh my God, it must be horrible to get up so early. And it actually like starts to make him mad after a while.
Right, yeah.
It's like you're bringing up the worst thing about his life 3 times a day, just random strangers. So now I think he just snaps at these people.
Yeah.
It's like when people ask Will Chamberlain
like
if he was tall. Yeah, I mean, it's,
I love being miserable with people. I like that better than joyous stuff. So when somebody brings up a negative part about my life, I like trying to think of something negative about them, and then it's a whole conversation. It's great.
What's your review of Yankee Stadium?
It's
other than the prices.
But they shouldn't call it Yankee Stadium. It's not Yankee Stadium, right? It's like you know what the Yankee Stadium is? It's like if your father's young, hot, blonde. She's pretty, but she's not your mom, you know?
Yeah.
And they got to tear down the old Yankee Stadium. It's right there. For me, it was like playing catch with my stepdad next to my father's grave or something. It was,
right.
It's beautiful, but you might as well just... It's not Yankee Stadium anymore. Even after it was renovated in 76, it was still, you know, Yankee Stadium. Now it looks like any other park. Even on TV, it looks like they're playing a minor league game or something. And you might as well just call it Models Field or Pepsi Field. Who cares? It's not... It's nice, but it ain't Yankee Stadium.
I couldn't agree more, because they did the same thing in Boston when they tore down the Garden.
Right.
And they called the new thing the Fleet Center for a while, and then it became the TD Bank North Garden, and now people call it the Garden again. It's like, it's not the Garden.
It's not the Garden. And I'll tell you what, one of the first jobs I ever booked in comedy was in 1995. I did a TV spot for some cable show up in Boston. It was April of 95, and I scalped tickets, and I saw the last Knicks Celtic game in the old Garden. So I actually got a chance to see the old Garden. And listen, I love Boston as a sports town. I respect the hell out of everybody up there, and it's more blue collar than New York. And I'm telling you, the Yankees could drive me into season tickets at Fenway.
Wow. We could get you? We need you. We need more funny fans.
I don't like I related, I'm just saying, like, I related to those the last two Red Sox years when they, like, in 04, they won in 04 and then what they won again in 07, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
Right. Right now, our alleged funniest fans are Dennis Leary and Dane Cook. So we need help.
Well, I love Dennis Leary. Dane Cook's a good guy, too. It's like, Dane Cook's comedy's not my style, but...
Dane has
a
problem, though.
Guy who sells out 50,000 seaters. He's doing something right. But Dennis Leary, I think, is hilarious. Dennis Leary's funny.
We need help, though.
And a real guy's guy. I did, like, 7 episodes of Rescue Me, and you talk sports with him, and you can tell he knows his stuff.
Oh, he's legitimate? Because I always wonder, like, you know, the celebrities, when they pretend they're big sports fans, sometimes it's not legitimate.
Oh, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
But I could tell Leary really knows his but, that happens all the time.
You must have that, when people come on Stern, you must think, like, oh, yeah, this guy's a big sports fan, then talk to them, and it's like, oh, yeah, he knows nothing.
Yeah, you could find out in 2 seconds. Like, Howard isn't, but Howard admits, Howard's whole thing is honesty, you know. But,
yeah.
But there's some people, like, sometimes Robin tries to get away with that. Like, sometimes she'll try to relate to, like, some sports news stories she's doing, and she'll say, I'm a big sports fan, and then, you know, like she'll say something that telling, like, she'll say, make a homer instead of hit a homer. You know? it's like when a secret gay guy tries to act manly.
Right.
And he'll try to pretend like he's in the sports. Like, he'll say something like, we men like our Monday evening football. You know, like...
Right.
It'll be like one word off, and you go, yeah, you've clearly never seen a Monday night football game.
Do you have other sports fans that you could talk to at the show or no?
Yeah, Fred is a big sports fan. Fred grew up outside of Hartford, Connecticut, and so he could have gone either way. His brother's a Red Sox fan, and he became a Yankee fan. They grew up right in between, and he's a hardcore Yankee fan. And Gary, Baba Booey, even though he throws like a gay guy, he's very knowledgeable when it comes to sports.
That was true. That was one of the worst throws ever. You've thrown out some first pitches.
Yeah, but never at... And listen, when I throw, I don't look like a young Sparky Lyle either. But I have too bad of a reputation for any major league. Like, the Yankees would refuse. I get treated like because of, you know, a lot of my stand-up material, I guess, and some of the stuff I stay on Howard. I get treated like a child molester. Like, I think that guy who kidnapped that broad, JC out in California, I think has a better chance of throwing out a first pitch in a major league game than me.
Carolla, did you see what Carolla took?
I asked a couple of times. You know, I threw out a couple of first pitches at Newark Bears games, like not even single A ball. I just did it like a couple of weeks ago.
Did you see Carolla with the 3 attempts?
No, I missed. I didn't see any of that stuff. I just know that Gary's was bad. And Chris Rock, you never see this, but Chris Rock threw one out one time, and it was horrid. Him and Sandler threw one out of the Yankee game when The Longest Yard came out. And I don't know who Chris Rock's publicist is, but he's good, because you never see that anywhere. But I remember seeing it going, oh, my God, it was Gary-esque.
You think Chris Rock's PR guy destroyed all the tapes?
I think I'll tell you what, if I... that would be the thing I'd be the most embarrassed by. I wouldn't care about bombing on Letterman or anything. I'd go, if I threw out a first pitch and I looked gay at a major league game, especially Yankee Stadium, I'd hire, like, you know, Howard Rubenstein. I'd hire, like, the best PR firm in the world to bury it.
Right. Yeah, that was always the thing I respected the most about President Bush.
I'm telling you, the way this country is, that got him votes.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, people voted for him because he didn't look like a fruit throwing out the first pitch. And John Kerry, if you remember that year, when he was running against them, threw out a first pitch at Fenway and looked horrid.
Yeah, the 9/11, Game 3 of the 2001 World Series, he strolls out. He's probably wearing this humongous bulletproof vest.
He was, yeah.
And just fires a strike and was really cool. And you're that's our president.
Derek Jeter has a story where Bush was downstairs by the – they have like a place to warm up for the pitchers by the locker room. And Bush was practicing because he took it really seriously. He used to own the Rangers, so I guess he was a baseball guy. And I think he played ball in college or something. But Jeter said to him, busting his chops, he said, look, don't throw from in front of the plate. You got to throw from the rubber. And, you know, don't look like a, you know, whatever politically correct version is for a major league player. Don't throw like a sissy or whatever. I guess Bush took that to heart. He made sure he went up from the rubber, and he threw a strike, and like, you know, he looked good.
Have you had Jeter on the show?
No, Jeter's smart not to do the show, and Howard wouldn't want to have him on if he was not, you know, Howard. Jeter, I love Jeter, but he's the most boring interview on the planet. Like, we want to hear about threesomes with him and starlets, and that's not what he's going to talk about.
Yeah, but sometimes Howard he just wears you down. It's like just he's blitzing on every down, and eventually people just cave.
If anybody could do it, it's Howard. He's brilliant at getting information out of people. Like, Howard did the best interview with Paul McCartney I've ever heard in my life, but Jeter, I think, has that permanent, thick public relations skin on. You know, it's almost like a robot just going, all right, we got to take it one day at a time, you know, and I love playing, and, you know, I don't hate A-Rod, and I've never had sex with an actress. it's almost like computerized.
Yeah, Belichick's like that, too. It's definitely like a rare skill that you can just acquire, and you'd be like, I am going to suck all the excitement and enjoyment out of everything I say, and that's just the way it's going.
Well, you know, and you got to be good. Like, Jeter's good enough on the field to get away with it, you know? Like, Bob Uecker had to have a personality.
Right. You know, Jeter's having a big comeback year, and what's interesting is this: if this was anybody else at age 35, there would be a lot of HGH steroid whispers, but with him, it's like, oh, he's having a good comeback year.
Right, yeah, I know, exactly. Not enough people are talking about that. And when he first came up, you know, Yankee fans, like Red Sox fans, I'm sure, too, are, you know, you're really cynical, and you're like, you know, the young kid, the phenom, all this press about him. And you got to win over Yankee fans. And Jeter is just, I mean, now he's a veteran. I'm glad he's the captain. I had reservations when they made him the captain. I'm like, I don't know, is he really captain material? And he is, man. He is he's a pro, and he's clutch. And that's the big part about it, too, is clutch. A-Rod catches a lot of crap because, you know, he'll go 5-for-5 against the Royals in May, but then 0-for-October. You can't do that in New York.
So are you a Jeter guy or a Rivera guy? Because I feel like every Yankee fan deep down, if you had like the good son scenario where the mom's hanging over the cliff and she can only save one guy, and at gunpoint you have to save the one kid, Yankee fans are like that with Jeter and Rivera.
Well, listen, I love Jeter, but both in their prime, Rivera wasn't even human what he was doing.
Like, I agree.
The numbers he was putting up. And to have a closer, you know, potentially every night of a 7-game series, you know, if you got the lead after the 7th inning, it's done. I tell you, I'd say Rivera.
What's it like to work for a guy that you grew up listening to? Because I got to imagine that's just bizarre.
Well, in the beginning, it was weird. In the beginning, it took a lot of adjusting, but I had gone in to do interviews 4 times before I got the job or even started, you know, sort of auditioning, if you will, whatever you want to call it, like on the air with the other comics who sat in after Jackie left. By the time I did that the first time, I had been on the show 4 times with Norm MacDonald, the comic. We went in and promoted movie and TV stuff we did, and Howard liked me because I had all these loser stories that I was honest about. So by the time I went in there, I had gone through that crazy first time seeing him in person, you know, and talking to him. But I was such a big fan since I was, like, 13. You know, it really was, like, a lot of mornings I'd have to, like, slap myself in the face. Is this a dream kind of thing? And then, you know, you got to bear down and just pretend you've known him your whole life, because that's the only way the show works. It's like the show at its finest is when, like, some people say to me, do you secretly hate Howard? I'm like, yes. And, you know, dude, I'm not that good of an actor. If I hated Howard or Fred or Robin or anybody in there, I couldn't do the job I do, because the whole point of the show is loving the people in there and fooling around all morning. Like, we act like third graders throwing spitballs, and we laugh with each other. If I didn't like these people or was still in such awe of Howard because I he's an icon and I grew up listening to him, I wouldn't be able to do the job I do. So in the beginning, there was a lot of that. But, you know, Howard's good at just breaking it down and just getting into the show. And before you know it, you're laughing, having fun like you've been friends your whole life.
I don't think people realize how important he was in the 80s. Like, people who are in the tri-state area. I know for me, because my parents had gotten divorced, I was living in Connecticut.
Right.
And he came on, and it was this form of comedy that between him and Letterman, it was like almost going to school for how to be funny.
Yeah,
and I just listen to it.
It's weird you say that, because I always make that comparison too. Letterman started his NBC show in 1982, the same year Howard came to the same building in New York in 82 to do his radio show. And those two guys were enormous influences on me. Like, now there's days where I'll do Howard in the morning and do Letterman that afternoon, and it airs that night. And that's really when I go, wow, I'm doing everything I literally always dreamed of with two innovators. Like, Howard and Letterman they're originals, you know. And
yeah.
That's what makes them different. They're creators of something different. And, you know, Howard would be on in the morning, and then I'd watch Letterman at night and going to school like I was hungover from laughing and being such a fan. But not a lot of people make that connection with Howard and Letterman. I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people are like, what's the connection? I'm like, for me, time-wise, when I grew up, I loved the two of them because they were different and great. And now, like I say, I'm a regular on both of their shows. It's really, like, I care about that more than money. You know what I mean? It's like I have days in my memory bank of doing Howard in the morning and Letterman in the afternoon. It's great.
The thing that I always thought was interesting about them was that they were basically doing the same thing in different ways. Like,
right.
Letterman was kind of letting people hang themselves or making fun of people in, like, that really ironic kind of detached way, where Stern would just go after him.
Yeah, Letterman was ironic and Howard was direct. They were completely funny and completely original for totally different reasons.
Do you have a moment with Stern where you're like, that was the day I fell in love with that guy, comedy-wise?
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I ever heard him, because my father, who I respected a lot on a lot of levels, even my father, you know, climbed roofs for a living and installed, you know, antennas and clean gutters, and he was a real blue-collar guy, but he had a great sense of humor, my father.
Yeah.
And he would drive in a van all day going from job to job, and he heard Howard. And in the summer of 82, he told me, you're coming to work with me tomorrow, you got to hear this guy on the radio, because he was on the afternoons. And my father and I heard him do this bit where he was called a farm and was asking the guy how big his cocks were. You know, it's just like, I remember being 13 years old and hearing that, and me and my father at a red light, like with a ladder in between us going to a job, like looking at it, like it's such a bonding moment. Like, remember my father's laugh.
Right.
At Howard, like it was yesterday. So probably from like the first couple minutes I listened, you know.
I remember being on vacation once and we were flying, and I had taped like a week worth of Stern shows.
Yeah.
And I was listening to them, and the lady next to me was just kind of like, why is this kid just laughing?
Right.
And she's like, can I hear some of that? And I'm like, okay. So I gave her the headphones. And after a minute, she just like solemnly gave them back to me.
Right.
Just,
I turned my mother on to it because I would always have it on in my room. I had a little radio in my room.
Yeah.
And, you know, our house, you know, was a small house. Her room and the bathroom was real close to one another. And so when I would get up in the morning, I would throw Howard on, and I would just, like, blast it. And at first she was like, that guy's disgusting. And then by, like, the second week she was laughing. And my mother's been a Stern fan for a long time, though.
Yeah.
I got her hooked on it from her overhearing it in my room.
I remember liking him right away, but for some reason, like, the tipping point for me was he was playing that Led Zeppelin movie. and just making fun of Robert Plant as Robert Plant was doing the speech during Stairway to Heaven. He's got that ridiculously unself-aware speech, and they were ragging on it. I was like, this is it. This is what comedy should be like. I just kind of like all fell into place.
He just thinks when people are pretentious, he just shoots them with an arrow, and that's so great. Yeah, that's the Robert Plant going, does anybody remember laughter?
Yeah,
you know, it's like... Yeah, you know, and the stuff with, like, Robin playing clips of the actors sounding so stupid, talking about a movie during the news, and, like, all he would have to do is just go, ugh.
Well, ironically, you guys, you had a lot to do with celebrities becoming more self-aware, because Stern was calling them out all the time, and eventually they kind of realized, uh-oh, I can't act like this.
Yeah, you know, when there's nothing better than during the news, Robin playing an actor talking about his character and, like, what he's doing is brain surgery and Howard making fun of that. Like,
yeah.
Like, no one ever did that before. It's so honest and so un-Hollywood, you know. It's like a lot of comedians wouldn't even go there because they'd have to maybe get in a movie with the guy they're making fun of. But
yeah.
You know, Howard never cared about that. Like, that's the one thing I really respect about Howard. Like, after working with him now for 8 years, I know for a fact that there's nothing Hollywood about the guy. He's just like, he's loyal to one person, and that's the guy in traffic in the car on his way to a job he might hate, miserable. He wants to make that guy or girl laugh. That's all he wants to do. So, you know, I've heard him, you know, turn down interviews with major celebrities because he knew they'd be boring, and, like, you know, that pisses off a publicist, and, like, there's that whole infrastructure of show business that you have to worry about, publicists and everything. And I've heard Howard turn down an A-list actor or actress because he knew they'd be boring just to interview Beetlejuice for 2 hours, you know,
yeah.
He's loyal to that person in the car in traffic, and he's still like that, and I think that's why he's still relevant. You know, he never sort of, like, he's not going to cut an actor a break if they sound stupid just to make the publicist happy. Like, there's none of that in Howard at all. And there's not really a lot of that in Letterman either, especially in the beginning. Letterman would, you're right, he'd let somebody hang themselves, like a dumb model in an interview or something, and then he'd throw, like, a skewering comment, like, filled with irony and, like, anger.
Yeah.
And it was just, one time, this is a more modern version of it, but he used to do this all the time. Cameron Diaz was on Letterman, and this was like a few years ago, and this reminded me of the old Letterman. That's why I love this clip. Cameron Diaz is telling some story that's supposed to be funny, like an anecdote from the set or something, and it's boring and it's bombing. Like, she's getting nothing, and Letterman's not helping her at all. He's, like you said, he's just letting her hang herself.
Yeah.
So she finishes the story, and there's, like, no reaction at all. It's just, like, silence. And Letterman waits, like, 5 seconds and then puts a big fake smile on and goes, so how do you like making them movies? And that's what he does all the time. You know?
And the crowd gets it. They'll always, they know right away what he's up to, which is, you know, which is amazing that he can connect with that to people that aren't even that funny.
Well, now I know. Well, yeah. Now I know from doing his show, like from doing both guys' show, Howard and Letterman. Like, that's why when I did that Joe Buck show, people were like telling me, like, oh, what you did was mean and stuff. I'm like, dude, I'm on Howard Stern every day, and you know, I do Letterman and stuff, and I've been a regular on Conan for a long time. These are some of, like, the funniest people in the world, and you know, it makes you up your game. It's like, I'm not afraid to go toe to toe comedically with Joe Buck after what I did.
Right.
And doing Joe's a great guy, and I do think he could be funny, but it's like, right now, like, I don't know if it's good or bad or where it is in the range of things, but I know for a fact, after 8 years on Howard and being a regular on, like, Conan and Letterman and doing stand-up every weekend, I'm as funny as I'm ever going to be. Like, I know I've reached every potential of being as funny as I can be right now, I think. I think I'm as witty as I'll ever get. I don't know where that lands. I don't know if that, you know, I'm not calling myself, like, a great comedian. I'm just saying I know I've reached my potential. Just
right. You know,
the people I work with, you know.
you know you can go on a show like that and you know exactly how it's going to play out pretty much, which is why...
Not exactly. And look, I'm just saying, me personally, I know from working with Howard and doing these other things that I do and stand up in front of live crowds, it can be rough. Like, I just know I'm as funny as I can be. That might not be that funny compared to a lot of other people, but I know that I'm good enough to be on the Howard Stern show every day, and that's a confidence builder. So when you do, like, another show and you go for laughs when you're just sort of bantering with somebody and there's a live audience there to feed off of, it might sound like you're being mean, but you're just, you know, you're trying to get laughs, you know.
Well, I knew you well enough to know that putting you on HBO, on live TV, with Joe Buck, who was in that I Need to Now Pretend That I'm a Funny Gregarious Guy, I could smell it. Like, I was excited all day. I was like, something's going to happen on this. I really felt that way, honestly. and it just... From the get-go, you could smell blood in the water.
Yeah, the producer said stuff afterwards that didn't make any sense. They were like, we thought we were going to get the guy that's like funny about sports stories that Artie's like on Letterman or Conan or something. And I'm like, would someone with an IQ above 50 explain to this guy why I might be a little different on HBO? I
mean, yeah.
I mean, and why wouldn't you want me to be different there? I mean, like, that's the whole fun of it. It's guys talking sports on HBO. I'm not allowed to curse or call someone gay if they like TMZ.com.
Well, that's the thing. When you made the .com joke, which we'll have to bleep, you know, anybody rolls with that. If they're funny, but Joe, he just had that look on his face, like,
well, I think,
oh my God, what do I do? And that's when you were like, all right, I'm going to roll with this.
Yeah, well, it was only like, first of all, what aggravated me, and you know, and all these like self-righteous writers in the paper were saying what Artie Lang did was disgusting. He's a pig, you know. It's like, I'm like, you know, first of all, no one mentions that the whole audience. Look, as a comedian, I can read an audience, you know.
Yeah.
If what I was doing was bombing, I would have shut up, but. Like, and I think they knew I'd get dirty, but to say this .com thing right out of the gate, I think might have been startling, you know. And but the audience not only laughed, it like got a cheer, you know,
right.
Because quite frankly, up to then, the show was kind of boring, you know.
Well, it turned out to be the
horrid, you know?
It was the best thing that happened to the show because, as you said, people would have come away from that being like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Joe Buck show. But, you know, then you became the talking point. Then they could make a big deal about, okay, we're not going to do that again. We're going to become a serious show, which is what it should have been anyway.
Right. And a lot of writers, I mean, look, I've never been a critic's darling in anything I do. And I don't mind if you say, you know, I'm a pig or I didn't think it was funny. I get it's not funny to everybody. And I get, you know, it's rude and crude. But at least give me to say, look, but it did seem like the crowd enjoyed it. And,
yes.
You know, and I curse for the same reason Chris Rock doesn't do his specials on NBC. You know, I mean, I'm not putting myself in Chris Rock's league, but I'm saying on HBO, yeah, you can curse. And if they had come up to me beforehand and said, look, don't curse. We want you to act like you are when you're on Letterman or something. And I promised them I wouldn't. And then did what I did. Yeah, then I'd owe an apology to somebody. But they know who I am. They never told me not to curse. So, you know, Paul Rudd and the other guys sitting there, they were nice guys. But quite frankly, they weren't lighting the place up. You know, I don't know.
Well, and the other thing that I think warrants mentioning is if this allegedly went so bad, then why did they rerun it 10 times and why did they keep it on the website? It's like, obviously, it didn't go that bad. Yeah, like, yeah, this is terrible. We don't condone this at all. By the way, tomorrow night, HBO 2, 7:45, a replay.
Yeah, it's. I mean, look, my paperback version of my book was out on shelves, and it went on the New York Times Bestsellers Week. After that Joe Buck thing, it went from 19 to 6. In like 2 days.
Wow.
And Joe Buck got a lot of publicity, too. It was good for everybody.
And I think he learned a lesson is that you don't, you know, there's two kinds of comedy chops. And if he's not going to be able to trade barbs with somebody who sits with Howard Stern for 25 hours a week. It's not going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. Well, maybe he can. Like, I'm just saying, again, I'm not saying I'm like one of the funniest guys ever. I'm just saying I'm as funny as I ever could be. And I'm going to have confidence if I'm on the Howard Stern show every day. I'm going to have confidence going on the Joe Buck show. And to me, it would have been funny. Nothing's funnier than, like, you know, a little kid going up to some big bully and just punching him out. It would have been great if he
if he came back and just, like, laid me out. That would have been good, too. It would have been interesting. But, you know, I think the .com out of the gate was a little startling. I could even understand where they're coming from.
Especially for Joe, who couldn't move for, like, 10 seconds. Well, I got to say, I really enjoy your sports perspective, and it kind of bumps me out that from a mainstream standpoint, you're not utilized more. Like, I feel like I would love to see, like, a 5-minute take on one of those 55 NFL shows every week, or like you're right, making gambling picks or something. I don't know. There feels like there's something you should do.
I got offered inside the NFL. I got offered to do what Jimmy Kimmel was doing on that for a while. But
oh, and the Fox one?
No. Jimmy wasn't doing that. No, the HBO one, inside right. the NFL. But they wanted somebody to be like what Jimmy did on Fox, you know.
Right.
And Jimmy was great with those guys like Bradshaw and Fox and everything. But again, I had a conversation with some of the people at HBO, and I got the feeling that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to do what I wanted to do, like, you know, language-wise and everything, even though it was HBO. And I thought it might be a nightmare to do something I like and then have them edit the hell out of it and be powerless and watch them air something that I think sucks and I look like. And it was nice of them to think of me, because mainstream-wise, you're right, I'm not thought of a lot. But for the exact reason that, you know, what happened on Joe Buck. I mean, that's why they're afraid of it. Because sports, even though some of the biggest dirtbags on the planet are involved with the sports world, there is that hypocrisy. Sports loves to have that elitist attitude, like, you know, you're talking about the game that Joe DiMaggio played. How dare you curse? You know, stuff like that. And I hate that. So maybe it's sort of a good thing I don't do more mainstream stuff, because I wouldn't know how to do mainstream stuff. Like what Jimmy did on Fox, Jimmy Kimmel, I thought was great. And I respect that, because I don't think in those parameters I could become that popular, you know.
You could be in tone of town. Yeah, I see what you mean. Well, you also love talking about gambling, which...
That's
makes a lot
thing.
Of people squeamish. I'm the opposite. I could talk about gambling all day. I somehow convinced ESPN.com to let me make picks against the spread every week in 2002.
With the spread is awesome.
Yeah. Well, because it's like you can't pick straight up. That's not fun.
Yeah, that's what Nick Bonacani and
the Bears would be 17-point favorites. They'd be like, Nick, I like the Bears.
Yeah, that's what they would do. They would just pick the team without the spread, and you're like, how? And then they would compare scores, like, I'm beating you by two. Like, how are you guys losing any game?
Right.
As a gambler, I remember getting really mad at that. But again, that's when you talk about mainstream stuff. I mean, look. Pete Rose isn't in the Hall of Fame because his vice was gambling. You know, that's the one vice that sports are afraid of, because, you know, you see this Miguel Tejada story that came out where the Oakland A's in the early 90s, the players accused him of, like, tipping friends of his on other teams' signs or pitches.
Yeah.
That's like stuff like that is, like, sports, like that brief thing that got snuffed out in the NBA with the referees supposedly, like, throwing games or whatever. That's the one thing that sports knows will destroy it if people think the games aren't on the level. So they're quick with the axe with gambling, you know.
Well, and that's also what led to a lot of the drug policies, because I don't think right. they even really cared if the guys drugged themselves to death. It was more like you don't want to get in a hole with a drug dealer and then fix a game.
Yeah, that's a real concern. I mean, it's less of a concern now because, you know, in the old days, it's funny. Like, you know, it's just so funny that, like, Stan Musial, I think, loaded trucks during the winter. Like, they needed other jobs. Like,
yeah.
Nowadays, the players make so much money, you'd think they could never get that much in the hole. But there's definitely a lot of guys who could. You're right. They're scared to death about all that stuff.
There's a couple NBA superstars who will be declaring bankruptcy in a couple years. I think people are going to be stunned. Like, guys who have made like $150, $170 million.
It's hard to, you know, again, it's like I've never made anything close to that. But compared to what, you know, my father made, like, it's insane the money I've been able to make compared to what my father used to make. And, you know, when you don't have people in your family who know how to manage money and no one's ever had money, you know, it's difficult. And if you go from Like, look at guys like Garnett or basically, well, I'm trying to think of another example of a guy who went who didn't go to college. Like,
well, Iverson is another example.
Yeah, Allen Iverson, perfect example. Well, what he did, like 2 years at Georgetown.
He was like, 1.5 years or something.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like you almost go from the streets to making $20 million a year. And, yeah, I mean, I used to get, and you're 19 years old. I used to get in trouble when I was 19 with $20 in my pocket.
Right.
19-year-old version of me with $20 million a year. Oh, my God.
Well, what was the Super Bowl that you won $1,300 on and you were worth minus $800 at the time or something? I remember hearing that story on Stern.
I had $500 in my name and I put $1,000 on a giant 49er game. I lost money on a Monday night Giant 49er game, and it was I had like $400 to my name, and I lost like $1,200. So I had the middleman for the bookie was a roofer, and I had to work for the guy for 2 weeks, six day weeks, carrying shingles up to a roof.
Well, I thought you won on the Norwood Super Bowl. Didn't you win that one?
Oh, that one I won. Yeah.
Yeah.
The losing is so much funnier, but the Norwood Super Bowl. Yeah, I had. If Norwood had hit that, I made the mistake of parlaying it. If Norwood had hit that, I parlayed the Giants and the under. And I hate connecting bets. I hate parlays. But I remember if Norwood had hit that, the Giants would have covered easy because they were getting 8. But I would have lost the parlay because that would have hit the over. The over was like 40 or something. And
you lost $25,000 on Tyson Holyfield 1.
Yeah, I lost $15,000 on Tyson Holyfield 1, but in Vegas for the whole weekend, I lost $25,000.
And you were not making the cash you're making now.
That's when I was on Mad TV. I was doing all right, but I not to the point where I could lose 25 G's in 48 hours. You know?
So you're out of the gambling loop now.
I don't gamble with a bookie anymore. Like if I do stand up at a casino or something, maybe I'll play some blackjack or craps or something.
Right.
But what I had to get rid of was the bookie thing. I mean, like just being able to pick up the phone and you don't lay out any money. You just look at the paper and you go, hey, give me $5,000 on the Indians. That's where you get into the big trouble because you're just making phone calls. You're not laying out any money. And before you know it, with the VIG, you're down $50,000 and, you know, that's when it gets hard. So I cut out betting with a bookie completely. But I did that well into being on Howard. And I don't know, I was a little too honest about that on the air because a lot of bookies were afraid that I was going to get them arrested. And then who needs that trouble? But
right.
I stopped the bookie stuff. But if I'm in a casino, I'll play some craps and stuff. The gambling has been a vice I've been able to control, actually, which is pretty good.
How about your other vices? You health wise, you're doing pretty good now, right?
Well, now I'm good. Yeah, I
lost some weight.
Yeah, I had a problem with every drug on the planet for a period of time, and I was taking this opiate blocker, Subutex, to stop you from like heroin withdrawals. And it's a strong drug, but one of the effects is, you know, you gain weight on it. And I'm already, you know, I was never Calista Flockhart to begin with. You know, I on that Subutex for the last 4 years, I was, you know, falling off the wagon, getting on the wagon, blah, blah, blah. I put on a lot of weight, and about 5 months, like 6 months ago now, I just got myself together and got all the drug use out of my life and got off that Subutex stuff and lost about 50 pounds. So health-wise, for someone with my life story, I'm doing towards the better part of great.
Right, I'm happy for you. And yes. you're back with your old girlfriend, right?
No.
A new girlfriend. You have some sort of
casualty of my vices, but no, I'm with someone new now, and you know, I'm doing all right. I'm 42 years old. I'm gonna be 42 October 11th, and there's a lot of people who, when I turn 40, there's a lot of people on the internet who lost money, put it that way. So there's a lot of people who think I'd see 42.
Well, I'm glad you're gonna see 42. I loved having you on. Anytime you want to come on and talk about sports and get your little your sports talk vice out, you let me know.
Yeah.
We're always here for you.
Cool. You're a good guy. I enjoyed this. It was comfortable. And stay away from the fires out there.
I will. Hey, one more thing. Plug your book.
Yeah, I got the paperback version of my book, Artie Lang, Too Fat to Fish, is out now. Get it at, you know, any bookstore, really, except Walmart, because they're uptight. But Amazon.com and everything, and you can go to Artie-Lang.com for all your Artie Lang news.
Walmart won't carry your book?
Nah, yeah, Walmart didn't carry my stand-up DVD. It's the Whiskey Talk, and I got a new one coming out. I got a new stand-up DVD that I taped called Jack and Coke, but that's what started it.
Wait a second. Why wouldn't you have a title called Banned from Walmart? It seems like a natural.
I thought about that. Well, I think there was a big story where they wouldn't carry Howard's book, so they had this thing about the Howard Stern Show. So from the first time I put my first DVD out for stand-up through the book, anything I've done, the movie I did, Beer League, that you know, had my name in the title, Walmart won't carry any of that stuff. They're really uptight. I mean, you could buy a gun if you're a teenager, I think, at Walmart. My book talks about hookers and gambling, so they don't have it.
Oh, God forbid. You know, I forgot to ask you one thing. There's no director's commentary on Dirty Work, right?
Actually, there is. If you get the DVD, me and the guy who directed it, Frank Sebastiano, the brilliantly funny guy, I wrote it with Frank. He directed it, and you know, I did the lead in it, so it was really like a 50-50 operation for us.
I did not know that. I will get the DVD, because I'm not saying this in a buck-kissing way, because I've written it. I thought it was like one of the most underrated cable movies of that decade. It's really nice. Funny. And I would watch it when it came on. It made me laugh. I thought it was Norm at his best. And it just kind of slipped through the cracks.
Work. Huh? Thinking of Dirty Work.
Yeah.
Norm's not in Beer League.
Oh, I was talking about Dirty Work. No, I like Beer League too. No, I was talking about the Dirty Work DVD.
Yeah, no, there's no director's comment on it.
Why wouldn't you and Norm?
Directed, so I don't think they asked them. But the movie I did, Beer League, that I wrote with my buddy, there's a director's commentary on that. And, you know, it's funny. Beer League, I met the kid who I did Beer League with on Dirty Work. Frank also wrote Dirty Work with Norm.
Really?
That's how I met him. We shot it up in Toronto. And you're right. I mean, there's a ton of... I signed Dirty Work DVDs at my shows like crazy. There's a bunch of people who love that movie. It's become kind of a cult thing. And it's like, look, if you like Norm... you know, again, it's Norm being funny. People don't realize this too. It's Chris Farley's last movie. He died two months after we shot that thing. It was weird.
Yeah, and well, I think you and Norm should get in the studio and just bang out a director's commentary, because I think more people like it than people realize.
Yeah, we'd have to pay for it ourselves, because I don't think anybody would put up the money. But maybe we'll do that. Just tape me and Norm in a hotel room on the road talking about Dirty Work.
Maybe you go to Vegas and do like $25,000 bet. If you win, you do the director's commentary for Dirty Work.
Believe me, I've had nights in Vegas with Norm where, like, you know, and conversations like that are completely plausible.
All right, Artie Lang, thanks for being the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Anytime you want to come back, let us know.
All right, Bill. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, man.
Take care.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.